David was arguably the greatest Israelite since Moses, yet his passing is barely mentioned in the book of 1 Kings. In this week's Top Torah reading, we see that David is about to die, and we read of David's last words to his son Solomon, whom he had chosen as his successor. David reigned over a unified Israel, but that unification didn't come without a price. David's struggles for the nation of Israel are well documented, primarily in the books of Samuel and Chronicles. His battles included victories, defeats, and challenges from his own family and close associates. At first, David's kingship only included the tribe of Judah, and he reigned from the city of Hebron for 7.5 years. But the entire nation was eventually unified under one king, David, who reigned from Jerusalem for the next 33 years. Through all of David's struggles, his victories, his defeats, and his personal triumphs and failures, David had a heart for God and a deep desire to serve the Lord in spirit and in truth. As he reached the end of his life, David desired to pass on this great legacy to Solomon, to see that his covenant with God would continue through his chosen heir, and that there would be always a son of David on the throne of Israel. Almost all of what we know about King David is recorded only in the scriptures and other Jewish writings. Secular histories have very little to no mention of King David. In years past, many scholars, not willing to accept the scriptural references as being entirely historically accurate, assumed that the biblical chronicles of David were much like the legends of King Arthur, at most a composite of many different kings and leaders, and at least a total fiction, a kind of cultural legend that serves to unify and secure a society. Now, that all changed with the rebirth of the nation of Israel in 1948, and when archaeological evidence began to surface, scholars discovered artifacts and other direct evidence of the reign of King David in exactly the places that the scriptures spoke of. Now, when we take a closer look at the chronology of King David and compare it with what we find in other secular histories and the writings from other Middle Eastern kingdoms and cultures, we find some corroborating evidence. Now, First Fruits of Zion, in their work Torah Club Volume 3, the Haftorah portions, quotes from the Expositor's Bible Commentary. These sources, that is the secular sources, provide a fairly accurate time sequence for dating events of the ancient Middle East, particularly so for the period of the kings. The general time frame of much of the period from Solomon to the fall of Jerusalem, at the siege and destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians, can be acknowledged as rather well established. Hence, we can say with a great deal of certainty that the year when David passed on the throne to Solomon was either 970 or 971 BCE. At the time of David, Israel was about to reach the pinnacle of their power and the fullest reach of their territory. It would be a time of relative peace for the nation of Israel. Other Middle Eastern nations were rather inactive at that time. The Assyrians were barely a blip on the radar, and the Egyptians, although displaying some aggressive activities, were never a serious threat to Israel. And after David, Solomon, in one of his very first acts as king, formed a political alliance with Egypt. Let's look at 1 Kings 3, verse 1. Now Solomon made a treaty with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and married Pharaoh's daughter. Then he brought her to the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall around Jerusalem. Solomon also fulfilled David's desire to build the house of God on the plot of land that David had purchased. Look at 2 Samuel 24, 20 through 21. Now Araunah looked and saw the king and his servants coming toward him. So Araunah went out and bowed before the king with his face to the ground. Then Araunah said, "Why has my lord the king come to his servant?" And David said, "To buy the threshing floor from you, to build an altar to the Lord, that the plague may be withdrawn from the people." The Haftorah portion for this week is rather brief, but contains the important last words of David as he gives charge to his son Solomon. David's words to Solomon can be broken down into three basic areas that we will take a little closer look at. Now, David tells Solomon to guard his life, to guard his Torah, and to guard his realm. David's first words to Solomon as David is about to die are about guarding his life. David had every right to name Solomon his successor, but Solomon's three older brothers were not happy with their father's choice. Amnon, Absalom, and Adonijah were spiritually and morally bankrupt. Solomon, on the other hand, had a willing and humble heart and found grace in David's eyes. Given that his older brothers were blinded by their own corruption and ambition, Solomon had to keep a special watch over his own life. David opened his words of wisdom to Solomon with an admonition to be strong and be a man. 1 Kings 2, 1 and 2. Now the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man. David wasn't giving this advice to Solomon out of some macho considerations. In a previous teaching, we learned that Solomon may have been as young as 12 years old at the time of his coronation, according to some Jewish tradition. Now, David realized that Solomon was very young and perhaps too young and inexperienced to be king over all of Israel. Solomon, nonetheless, had to function as a grown man, and David wouldn't be at his side to guide him on this path. So Solomon had to be strong, mature, and grow up very fast. David was not referring to a physical strength in his charge to Solomon. Solomon would have armies at his command to exercise physical strength and power. David was speaking of spiritual and moral strength, which comes from the Lord, and he wanted Solomon to seek out God's strength first. Now, this is evident in David's next few words to Solomon. Look at 1 Kings 2, 3 and 4. And keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn, that the Lord may fulfill his word which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons take heed to their ways, to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, he said, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. In David's words to Solomon, I'm reminded of God's encouragement to Joshua as he took over the leadership of the children of Israel and led them into the promised land following the death of Moses. But let's take a moment and focus on the opening phrase of verse 3, keep the charge of the Lord. Now, this is not the literal translation of the Hebrew text, which, if done so, would not make much sense in the English. So looking at the Hebrew text will give us a deeper understanding of David's word. The Hebrew phrase would translate, and guard the protective guards. This context reveals that David was referring to the Torah. Solomon was to protect and guard God's Torah because that is what provides his guard and protection. Deuteronomy chapter 17 speaks specifically about the duty and responsibilities of the king. Deuteronomy 17, 18 through 20. Also, it shall be when he sits on the throne of his kingdom that he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book from the one before the priests, the Levites. And it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, and be careful to observe all the words of this law and these statutes, and that his heart may not be lifted above his brethren, that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, and that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel. Now perhaps David was reminding Solomon of this very passage of the Torah, or perhaps reminding him of Abraham's life and how it reflected this concept as well. Genesis 26, 4 through 5. and I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed my voice, and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." Further in verse 3 of our Haftorah reading, David gets more specific about what those guards are and what actions Solomon should take. David referred to ways, statutes, commandments, ordinances, and testimonies. So let's take a look at two places in Deuteronomy where these same words are used. The first is Deuteronomy 6, verse 17. "You shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God, his testimonies, and his statutes, which he has commanded you." The other is Deuteronomy 26, verses 16 and 17. "This day the Lord your God commands you to observe these statutes and judgments. Therefore, you shall be careful to observe them in all your heart and with all your soul. Today you have proclaimed the Lord to be your God, and that you will walk in his ways and keep his statutes, his commandments, and his judgments, and that you will obey his voice." Now, wouldn't it have been simpler for David to just say, "Keep my commandments and stick to the Torah"? But each of these words have specific meaning and are important. The word for ways is derekim. It is from number 1870 in Strong's lexicon, meaning a course of life or mode of action. Solomon was to literally stick to the Torah. The Torah is God's instructions in righteous living. The word implies a lifestyle choice. The word for statutes is koch, number 2706, meaning an enactment, appointment, something bound, or covenant. The word for commandment is one we are probably most familiar with. It's mitzvot, and it's the plural form of mitzvah, number 4687. It literally means commandment, law, or ordinance. And we also understand it to mean good deed. The word for judgments, some translations will use the word ordinances, is mishpatim, number 4941, meaning verdict, sentence, or formal decree. Now, this word would refer largely to the legal aspects of the Torah. And the last word is testimonies. It's iduth, number 5715, meaning testimonies or witness. The Torah was to give a testimony or to bear witness to a righteous life. All of the words refer to specific categories of instruction found in the Torah. David was being very specific in his charge to Solomon. David clearly understood and was familiar with all of these aspects of the Torah and wrote extensively in the Psalms about how these applied to his life and his reign as king. Psalms 119 is one such example. Let's look at Psalms 119, verses 1 through 8. "Blessed are the undefiled in the way, who walk in the law of the Lord. Blessed are those who keep his testimonies, who seek him with the whole heart. They also do no iniquity. They walk in his ways. You have commanded us to keep your precepts diligently. Oh, that my ways were directed to keep your statutes. Then I will not be ashamed. When I look into all your commandments, I will praise you with uprightness of heart when I learn your righteous judgments. I will keep your statutes. Oh, do not forsake me utterly." David's third charge to his son Solomon was to guard his realm. In 1 Kings 2, 5 through 9, David is instructing Solomon on some specifics about keeping his kingdom and throne secure. In this passage, David tells Solomon what kind of people to watch out for going forward. Two of them are negative influences, and one of them is positive. In our day, we might recognize David's words as an application of the adage, "Keep your friends close and keep your enemies closer." The first person David mentioned is Joab, 1 Kings 2, 5 through 6. "Moreover, you know also what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, and what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner, the son of Ner, and Amasa, the son of Jether, whom he killed. And he shed the blood of war in peacetime, and he put the blood of war on his belt, that was around his waist, and on his sandals that were on his feet. Therefore, do according to your wisdom, and do not let his gray hair go down to the grave in peace." Joab was a thorn in the side of David. He was one of those people who could be a great asset in the time of need, but Joab was always looking out for his own interests and would quickly become an enemy should the circumstances require it. Joab was very loyal to David, but only to a point that served his own interest. After the death of Saul, Abner, then the commander of Saul's army, waged a war with David and Judah. Abner, finding war with David fruitless, eventually entered into a covenant of peace with David and thereby unifying all the tribes into one kingdom. Joab didn't trust Abner and eventually murdered him contrary to David's wishes. Now, this incident was relayed to Solomon in David's words in verse 5. He shed the blood of war in peacetime. In another incident, David was faced with a rebellion by his own son Absalom. David gave instruction that Absalom was not to be harmed, but Joab took matters into his own hands by subsequently murdering Absalom. David left it up to Solomon to handle the matter of Joab, using his own wisdom and judgment, with the condition not to let Joab die in peace. Next, David tells Solomon to give special attention and care to the sons of Barzillai, who assisted David in the time of need during Absalom's rebellion. Look at 1 Kings 2, verse 7. "But show kindness to the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table. For so they came to me when I fled from Absalom, your brother." Through this example, David was showing Solomon how to treat the righteous people in the kingdom. Solomon was to recognize and remember the kindness of such acts as those of Barzillai. David said that they should eat at the king's table. But what does it mean to eat at the king's table? A commentary by D.J. Wiseman explains, "To eat at the king's table was equivalent to having a pension, the beneficiary receiving a regular royal allowance of food and clothing, with a house and land to support him and his family." Another troublemaker that David leaves for Solomon to handle is a man by the name of Shimei, grandson of Saul, who confronted David at the time David fled during Absalom's rebellion. Look at 1 Kings 2, verses 8 and 9. "And see, you have with you Shimei, son of Gera, the Benjamite from Barim, who cursed me with a malicious curse in the day when I went up to Mahanaim. But he came down to meet me at the Jordan, and I swore to him by the Lord, saying, 'I will not put you to death with the sword.' Now therefore, do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man and know what you ought to do with him. But bring his gray hair down to the grave with blood." Cursing the king was clearly a violation of the Torah. Look at Exodus 22, verse 28. "You shall not revile God, nor curse a ruler of your people." For whatever reason, known only to David, he allowed this descendant of Saul to continue his bad-mouthing of the king, even though such cursing was a capital offense. In his last words to Solomon, David considered Shimei a danger to Solomon's reign. But given that David had allowed Shimei to live, Solomon would have to handle him in a different way. David was giving some very sound advice to Solomon. Solomon needed to protect his realm by eliminating all the troublemakers who would threaten his reign and the stability of the kingdom. At the same time, David instructed Solomon that he was also to protect and provide for those who were good influences. David gave examples of these two different kinds of people, and it was up to Solomon to discern the difference. Sometime after David finished speaking with Solomon, he died. Now, it's amazing that the writer of the book of Kings gives so little mention of the actual death of David, the greatest king in the nation of Israel. Look at 1 Kings 2, verses 10 through 12. "So David rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. The period that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. 7 years he reigned in Hebron, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years. Then Solomon sat on the throne of his father David, and his kingdom was firmly established. David was a true and faithful servant of the Lord. He was also a man with many flaws, and he had many personal doubts and fears. David poured out his heart to God, and some of his prayers and songs are recorded in the Psalms. Solomon took the charge from his father David to heart, and among his first acts as king, he prayed for the spiritual wisdom to handle the tremendous task of leading the people. Solomon would be a just king and ruled the nation with fairness and dignity. And we too can learn from David's final words to his son Solomon. God promised that a son of David would reign from Jerusalem forever. Solomon was but the first. Messiah Yeshua, a son of David as well, will one day return to his rightful place as the king of a united Israel and reign with wisdom and justice from Jerusalem. Someday, perhaps in our lifetime, we can say once and for all, "Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we can learn at his feet." I'm Dan Cathcart from Moed Ministries International. Shalom and be blessed.